Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Well, what's up this week is May 26, 2020. 26-2020. There's a lot of 20s in there.
20. I know, 2020.
I know. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, Steve, the producer, Johan. Millions of listeners are sitting there even as we speak going, all right, what's up this week? This is the 138th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You can find us on iHeart. Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, of course, Podomatic.com, and a bunch of others, which we're still finding new places where the show gets shared. Thank you for doing that, by the way. We appreciate you sharing our show. We thank you for liking and following our Facebook page and all the latest stuff on our website, which is coming along. And, of course, we got the YouTube channel now, which is doing really well, and some of our shows are getting up there. Steve is working hard on the archives. We will get them there. Do not worry. It's all coming up. I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Witch Doctor Restorations. Let your project be a Witch Doctor project. Big job, small job, dream job. Call Shane at 206-437-1765. Our first segment is always Back to the Blacktop. That's where we find out what's going on in the automotive industry and news and information. As usual, Steve has not made up a single solitary story today. It's all true.
No, I have not. It is all true, at least according to the reporting that I've been following after. And under the COVID casualty comes the following headlines.
Oh, no.
McLaren Group, known for their highly engineered cars and Formula One racing team, announced that it will be cutting 1,200 jobs across all of its businesses.
That, you know, do we have any idea how many people McLaren
employs? Basically it's a quarter of its employee base.
That's brutal.
It is, and, you know, I didn't realize they actually had that many people working for them.
I knew it was a large company, but I couldn't have picked a number.
No.
Wow, that's horrible.
Well, and for a company like this that specializes in high-end cars, here again, and this includes the racing team, of course, no one's racing right now, so they kind of all on furlough at this point in time. So anyway, that's 1,200 people. They lost a quarter overall. So we wish them best in recovering. It may be months before they do, of course, like everybody else. Another casualty is the New York Auto Show, which had been rescheduled for August. But get this, they have decided to throw in the towel for 2020 with no further plans on trying to reschedule this year. And you know what? We've got a slew of – actually, I didn't go up to Memorial Day cruising to Colby. Did you go up?
Well, it wasn't there. It was canceled.
It's canceled.
However, what's happening here, and I suspect it's happening in other places around the country as well, a lot of car people are putting together sort of, you know, pocket shows.
Yes,
they're having
they
a
are.
Cruise in. It's not really a show. There's no judging, no trophies, but people are getting together and cruising, which was kind of the genesis of the sport in the first place.
It is.
I'm glad to see it.
Yep.
You know, they're maintaining. Obviously, there's no.
Well, if you're in your cars, you can't very well, if you're driving and cruising, it's not like you're going to be around anybody.
It's true. And even if you stop at some place and get a burger, you do that anyway.
You can do that anyway.
It's, that seems to be how this season has been going so far. So a lot of the big shows, of course, like you say, are being postponed or canceled.
Right.
And that's just, it's just going to be a sucky year.
It is. And I think maybe this, if you're really thinking about it, it may become a retro back to the old days of cruising. So more people will actually get out and maybe 4, 5, 10 cars will go cruising on the cruising strips.
Yeah.
And with not a lot of cars out there, they'll be able to have a great time. They're not going to get hassled by the police.
Right.
And I think, you know, look, folks, if you have a group of people that you like to get together with, get together and go cruise and meet at some, meet at somebody's private property if you want to or whatever. But anyway, have fun. And then under this heading comes debt. As we talked about last week, Hertz Global Holdings had filed for Chapter 11 in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court.
That really hurts. I'm sorry.
Well, what really hurts is that when I came to find out that actually out of their $26 billion worth of assets, they only own less than $2 billion because $24 billion plus is actually outstanding debts.
It's leveraged, yeah.
And
yeah. A lot of big companies do that.
It's like, what? This is how big companies do this.
Yeah. Yeah,
I get
it. They leverage their money to make other money. But when something like this happens, all of a sudden that stuff comes due.
It sure does.
That's why companies go down. It's not uncommon. 2008
was when it came due. And so this is the way it goes. And I think a lot of people just are not satisfied with just being cash positive, smaller, and really good at what you do. It seems like these guys just can't stop gobbling up other competitors and wanting to get bigger, 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 bigger. And then they own all their competitors. So maybe this will allow some people to pop their heads up and say, we can do a really cool job, but we're just going to hit a niche market. Maybe we're going to be the best rental in Dallas. And they become their best Dallas
could be
rental. So we'll
you know,
see.
When I was traveling for business, several of the companies that I worked for at the time used Hertz exclusively.
Oh, yeah.
Not because they were the best, just because that's the one they chose. But I've had a lot of experience with those guys, and I always thought they did a great job. They're a little bit more expensive than some of the units.
Yep.
But nevertheless, I mean, it's sad to see any company go down under these kind of conditions, and it's sad for them too.
It is. And then a change of guard over at Aston Martin, with the ouster of auto veteran Andy Palmer, who had launched a brand new expansion plan when he joined back in 2014. Well, he has been replaced by none other than Tobias Moers, the CEO of Mercedes-AMG.
Ah, yes.
So they're probably trimming back again, bringing it closer underneath the auspice of Mercedes, and probably saying, we can do okay. It's not a big seller.
It's a cost-cutting measure.
It is.
I mean, let's face it. Everybody who's got any kind of public contact, auto dealerships are doing this, car companies, motorcycle companies, they're all trying to find some way to make this work, you know, in these kind of conditions. And virtual auto sales are up. But it's a compromise for anything that was already sold as kind of a touchy-feely thing. I mean, test drive. It's hard to do now, and yet, you know, it's the only way they can make it work. So the business is changing until this whole thing is over.
It is, and Austin has never been a big seller. It was more of a specialty car.
Oh, sure, of course.
And so we can see that happening. Good news comes from manufacturers are reopening, albeit under new restrictions, as in wearing masks, standing certain distance apart.
Right.
But this is causing delays as workers have to retrain under the new conditions. You just can't run in, hey guys, how's it going, and grab your stuff. All of a sudden you have to do these cleaning things. You have to go through the whatever. So it's adding more time for the retraining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then on.
And more time for the process, too.
Oh, a lot longer.
I saw a commercial today for Amazon. And all of their drivers, the Amazon drivers, the stuff that they are doing now, you know, the masking, the gloving, the desensitizing. Yep. They're sanitizing the vehicles in between all the deliveries. I mean, it's really pretty involved. And, of course, they're saying it because they want people to understand that they're, maintaining the protocols and being safe.
Right.
But the cost to that has got to be significant.
Yeah, and you got to wonder all the sprays that people are spraying. Maybe the masks will prevent it from getting your lungs, but after a while, it's like, really?
I'd be more worried about the hand sanitizer catching your car on fire. Did you see that story?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
It is alcohol-based.
Well, yeah, apparently somebody had some in one of the door pockets, driver's side door, and I don't know what the circumstances were. I did not see the entire ad. I've just seen pictures. The inside of this guy's door, you know, it's all plastic these days, most of that stuff. And it's shredded and melted because apparently, somehow or another, they got hot enough wherever he was, someplace in the Southwest, I'm sure. And the thing caught on fire.
Wow.
And his hand sanitizer, it wouldn't do it by itself. It doesn't spontaneously combust. But nevertheless.
Maybe he dropped an ash or something out of a cigarette.
I don't know. And
they're not pointing
that
out.
I'm going to have to go and look at the story and see what it was. People probably know.
Well,
but it's a little scary.
I do know this, that in my van, we have little plastic hand sanitizers with a lock top, you know.
Oh, right.
And we kept them in the little box up front. And we would be traveling in hot places during the summer. Well, I remember one time I went over there to grab it, and the bottle itself was nearly bursting because of the pressure that had backed up in there.
Uh-huh.
And I went, wow,
this
expanded twice the size. So then I realized that alcohol in there, when it gets hot, it tends to do kind of strange things.
Well, it could very well be.
So you never know.
It's a little scary. Hey, thanks for tuning in. We got a great show tonight coming up on the Windshield View. We're going to welcome back Terry Cargas of the Peterson Automotive Museum. He was with us a few weeks ago, and we had so much fun, we invited him back. So stick with us. We will do that and more on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life, or just show up at your garage and weld up the frame for your rod so it stays together. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 206-437-1765. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 206-437-1765, 206-437-1765.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Project Yellow Light.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service.
Hi, it's Jeff Conwell with the Monsters and Manson, giving a big shout-out to everyone at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, and it's back with the first half of the Windshield View, and tonight we have Terry Cargas. He is the director at Peterson Automotive Museum. We are bringing him back on by popular demand because we have a lot of cars that we did not cover.
He was laughing when you said that, by popular demand.
Yeah, well, we're both pretty popular, and we both demanded that you come back. And by the way, I should share, just before we got on the live section here, Terry was saying that it's too bad we're not doing this on video. It was our original plan. We're having some technical difficulties.
Yep.
Because he looks really, really good tonight. I mean, you put on a clean Rat Fink t-shirt and everything. I mean, it's nice.
He's got his hair slicked back, pack of cigarettes rolled up.
So proud.
Well, I want to let you know we do appreciate all of the effort that you put into looking slick for the show. We, however, are our usual grungy selves, so you're the star tonight.
I get one night anyway.
There you go.
So we wanted to bring you back on. We have a lot of area to cover, but I was just kind of talking about kidding about the cigarette pack rolled up in the white sleeve shirt. And it reminded me, it just took me right back to this scene in American Graffiti with the guy driving his hot rod.
Milner.
And, yes, do you guys happen to have anything related to that movie in your museum by any chance?
I don't think on the American Graffiti, God knows we have all the hot rods, and we do have the car from the movie Grease, but not from Graffiti.
You got the Greased Lightning?
We got a Grease Lightning in there. Yeah.
That's too cool. What a great car. I always, you know, honestly, how many times, millions of times have I seen that movie? And yet, every time I see the Greased Lightning, I think to myself, you know, that's like a kind of a big potato bug that they painted white and put flames on there. It's a weird body style to be that, you know, much of a hot rod, but it was an iconic car, no doubt.
I don't think that whoever chose that car was a real car guy.
I don't think so either.
All right, that's a little bit of a burn.
Probably
there.
They didn't want anything to take away from the actual stars, Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta. Yeah. Maybe they wanted...
Well played.
It could be that.
Well played.
I like
yes.
that. I like that. That's a good one. Speaking of famous cars, movie cars, right, you know, song cars, the other night they reran, or maybe, I don't know if they reran it or if... My wife just pulled it up. We're watching American Graffiti, And it may have been on one of the, you know, Me Too channels. I can't remember which. But I was struck by, you know, the soundtrack for that movie. Every single car song. And, I mean, all of that teen angst stuff was in that movie. What an amazing soundtrack that was. And I keep thinking, you know, someday when I get my, my wife has a 51 Hudson pacemaker that we're currently building. And,
oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, I have a question about that one for you. Maybe it's you can help. but I think, you know, I want to get, I don't think I'm going to go with an 8-track, but I might go with a cassette player or something just to put it in there just for the grins.
Sure.
I'm going to get the soundtrack. That thing's going to run in that car. I just, I know that's the one.
That would be a hoot. Yeah, that'd be fun.
So I was going to ask you about a Hudson, if you don't mind. Have you got any Hudsons down there in the museum? Or have you had?
We have the Steve McQueen Hudson.
Oh, nice. Okay. All right. That's kind of cool. Was that, let's see, that was a, was that a 50? 52? I can't remember now.
I think it was a 50.
Okay. And a Hornet, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I everybody knew the Hornet. The Hudson Hornet is kind of the iconic thing. Of course, Doc Hudson, you know, from the movie. But I had no idea that they had made so many different models. They had the Hornet and the Pacemaker and the Commodore and the Jet. I mean, there was a bunch of different models of that car. And I had no idea that they had so many different things that were kind of essentially the same car.
Well, I think that was a common practice on certainly with companies that didn't have a budget enough to change a lot of the sheet metal or the trim, you know, just you could do the name changes. And then actually at Roush, I was there for about 14 years. We had any number of packages with a different striping and that, but in each one had its own name. But I think, you know, Hudson was, they were struggling in those days.
It's true. Yeah, they made it to 54, I think, and that was about when they folded everything up.
Right.
Well, you know, they even did that with Dodge in the Duster and the Demon and the Cuda and the Challenger. They were all basically the same vehicles. And so, and especially during the 70s, they just went with decals and the whole bit. So it was a very nice way to trim down the cost yet offer some high-speed fun. So speaking of high-speed, one of the things we wanted to bring you back on was to talk about Steve McQueen, because you mentioned he has a Hudson in there, but talk to us about the various cars that you have in your museum that showcase some of his passion for driving.
Well, the interesting thing about our possessions that were Steve's, the pinnacle of the collection, really, in terms of value, is probably his XKSS Jag.
Right.
You know, he owned it twice. It was white the first time he had it, and he sold it to Bill Hara because he was afraid of getting too many tickets. In fact, the story goes that the sheriff in town at that time had a standing offer to any of his guys that could catch McQueen and ticket him, that they'd give him a steak dinner. Nobody ever got him.
I'm sure of that. Well, unlike a lot of those Hollywood guys, Steve could drive.
He could really drive. He was a very capable guy, and not just drive. He could. He was a great bike guy too.
Yep, he was.
But he painted the car green, and had Tony Nancy, if you'll recall, one of the great leather guys and a Top Fuel guy himself, do the interior, and then he had Von Dutch do the dashboard because the XKSS was a former race car, and it didn't have a dash. So
right.
You got three iconic automotive names tied to that car, and it's a real, real special car. But the things we have the most of his were we've got an old Harley Davidson board tracker.
Right. 750, and, weren't they?
Sorry?
Weren't they the 750s?
You know what? I'm not familiar with those, with that era of bikes, but we've got four Husqvarnas just arrived.
Right.
The one that he rode on any Sunday.
Yeah.
And Bruce Brown's Husky, and who else? One of the guys on his crew, and then one of Steve's buddies that he had built an exact replica of his own bike that he actually never really rode, but a really great addition to our collection.
You know, it's been probably about 10 years, I think since I've actually seen On Any Sunday, I've probably seen it 10 or 12 times over the years. I've been thinking, as a matter of fact, I was thinking since last time we talked, I should drag that thing out or go and see if I can find it online or YouTube or someplace just to watch it again, because I mean, it's such an iconic movie. Everybody in the universe was in there, of course, and you know, it covered as much of all of the bike sports as it could possibly cover. But watching McQueen, you know, running through those things, everybody's trying so hard, and he's kind of effortless. It's just, you know, taking the best line through the turns in the mud. It's like, it's fun to watch him. He was, you know, the real deal.
He really was. I think, you know, that the other thing on that film that is that I think it was the discovery maybe to a lot of novices, but Malcolm Smith became in that. He was very special.
My all-time favorite Malcolm Smith piece from that movie is the hill climb where he goes up there. I mean, everybody's got their chained up, you know, nitro bikes, and they're trying to, you know, make it up this Widowmaker Hill. And he made it darn near all the way on a stock bike, just... You know,
wasn't that great?
Like, and then he rode it back down the hill. My man.
That's funny. That was, I'm old enough to have been at the Elsinore Grand Prix when they shot out of that.
Oh, that's great.
It was truly a wonderful, I mean, racing through town and then out into the fields, and there were thousands and thousands of people. It was a real party and a really great event.
No doubt. Well, let's talk about that some more when we come back. We're already to the end of the first segment. Amazing. The Windshield View will be right back. More with Terry Cargis on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Don't you dare go away, because we're going to stay right here. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
This is Jerry Heasley, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest show I've been on in at least the last year.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Oh, we're back with the second half. This is still the Windshield View on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And our guest is Peterson Automotive Museum Director Terry Cargis. And before the break, we were talking with him about Steve McQueen and some of the cool stuff that that he did. But Steve's going to go another direction here. You wanted to ask him a little bit about how he got involved in the museum in the first place, right?
Yes, I did. Terry, we didn't get a chance to talk about that the last time we had you on. So tell us a little bit about how did you weave your way into your position where you're at right now?
I actually got a call from Bruce Meyer, and Bruce had decided at one point that the museum needed to go in a new direction, and he called a fellow named Gordon McCall. If you know Gordon, he's the
yes, I do.
Center Wednesday night party, and a real bike guy himself. And he has all. He was the curator of the Quail Auto Show and the curator of the Quail Motorcycle Show. Anyway, he called Gordon to see if he had any suggestions, and he said, "Why don't you call Terry?" And Bruce, I had known Bruce for a number of years. I was at Roush for 14 years. Anyway, Bruce called, and this is almost 8 years ago now. And that's ironic. This month, 8 years ago, I got a call from Bruce
wow.
about would I be interested in going to the museum. And I had been on the road for about 14 years, 80% of the time. And I thought, live in Los Angeles, work in Los Angeles. What a concept.
There you go.
But we started talking and ended up making a deal. And I started in August of that year. And it was great. I went in. I worked on Monday and Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we drove up to Pebble Beach for the show. And on Sunday, I'm sitting in the Henry Ford Ferrari Barchetta on the stand getting a trophy, and I'm thinking, boy, this could be fun.
Pretty good first week at work, huh?
yeah, but it's been, every day has been a joy, really. I mean, there's so many great people that we get to work with, but you fellows and all of the other wonderful broadcast folks, all the media folks, but also every conceivable type of a car guy or a bike guy from every corner of the world, you know, from lowriders to Ferraris and Lambos and you name it. But it's been a work of joy and really a lot of fun. We've accomplished a lot together. We've got a fabulous team, maybe one of the best board of directors in the automotive world, all very knowledgeable guys and a gal, but very supportive. And they've stepped up. I mean, when it came time to redo the museum, they wrote huge checks and got behind it and said, let's do this. And, you know, like I say, a wonderful group. And then the team that we've been able to assemble now are as good as anywhere. We do about 100 events a year. You know, we've got a major digital effort going on right now during the COVID closure.
Sure.
So a lot of very good, talented people doing a lot of really wonderful things.
Well, you know, as people who do events, I mean, you know, I do a few car shows a year. I do other things. Of course, I've been involved in advertising and marketing most of my career, at least my second career. And it's not, you know, people think, oh, you just put on a show or you make a personal appearance or you do, you know, it's a lot of work. Everything that happens during that, you know, that one or two or even 3 day event took months of planning and logistics and everything. And it's easy to say we do 100 events a year. That's a ton of background. That's a ton of stuff behind the scenes.
But it's one of those things where you get involved in it and you're having so much fun and you're working with such creative people, not just in the museum, but outside, because you've got, you know, we've got an enormous group of passionate car people who love what they do, who love the involvement with the automobile or the bikes and are excited about doing, you know, what you're doing. And so the planning becomes a, you know, like I say, it's a work of joy, really.
Well, you know, you mentioned Gordon McCall. That rings my bell because years ago I had another show all about motorcycling, and I got a hold of Gordon. We had him on, and he told me some really fabulous stories about how he started out getting in the world of cars and motorcycles and there in Pebble Beach at the Quail and all that in Carmel, and he's good friends with Craig and others up there and Clint Eastwood and stuff. People don't realize it's like a mecca of people who love cars and old motorcycles. They all live up there and they all hang out, and it's just like no one cares what you do in life. Everybody just has a passion to do it. So you've kind of connected with some of those people, haven't you?
That's one of the great parts of the job is that those are all passionate car people that love to be involved in these events and are participating in so many things around the world,
know, that many of them have done well and have the time to be able to do it, but they also have a collection of wonderful cars that they like to show and share with people. You know, I think most of them are real gentlemen and ladies, and have been very kind to me and certainly contributed a great deal to our success, not only by their participation but in funding.
I think you ought to get a hold of Clint and ask him if he could bring down a couple of his collector cars, and you guys could make a maybe a year, quarter, 2 or 3 month exhibition featuring some of his cars.
We'd love that. I mean, as you know, we have a great Hollywood gallery, and that would be fun to have. We've got a number of star cars or cars from that were in movies or owned by movie stars, and you know, Clint, as a big fan of his, we'd love to do whatever we could with him.
You know, speaking of star cars and movie cars and stuff like that, we just like a couple, maybe a month ago, we finally ran into the guy. You're familiar, of course, with the song Hot Rod Lincoln.
Oh, sure.
And are you aware of the car?
No.
So there was an actual car, and it was, you know, originally built. I mean, the guy wrote the song about his car. Charlie Ryan wrote the song, and he was a Northwest kind of a guy, and he ran into some hard times, and his song, you know, wasn't as popular as it was, and he was sort of a, you know, a Me Too sort of a country artist, and he wrote a bunch of stuff. But anyway, he ended up having to sell the car, and, it, you know, his career languished, and years went by, and somebody in the Pacific Northwest found the car and thought, you know, I think this is actually the Hot Rod Lincoln. And so they finally managed to get a hold of Charlie, and they said, you know, we think this is your car, is it? By that time, he was fairly old. And the story goes that they said, look, we'll restore the car if you let us, you know, if you'll, you know, give us some of the original stuff about how it was. So 4 or 5 of the people around here put the whole car back together, as good as new, in fact, better. And Charlie's career kind of, you know, revamped a little bit, even in his later years. And when he finally got to the point where he was kind of done, he said, look, I got to sell the car. It's all I've got. And I, you know, I'm not maybe going to be around so much, you know, anymore. But whoever buys it, I really don't want any money for it. Would you just take care of my wife until she's gone? And they said, absolutely. The guy that bought it said, you know, good. He did. And after she passed, the car got sold. And so now, cut to about 6 years later, I found the guy who currently owns the car, and he's back.
Oh my God.
He's in Illinois someplace. His name is Dave Demangon, and I got a hold of him. I said, are you aware of the history of this car? And he said, no, I bought it because it was kind of cool, and I show it and everything. I said, look, I'll make you a deal. If you come on the show, I will make sure that you get the entire history of the car, because we have it. One of our friends wrote the entire history and knew the guys who built the car. It's in the old Car Nut book 2, by David Dickinson. And he's going to come on the show.
Oh, cool.
And it would be so cool to hook him up with you and see if maybe he'd be willing to put it down in the museum for a little while.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. We'd love that. Those are the things. You just zeroed in on what makes this so interesting. We have 250 cars in our vault. You can walk down there and say, oh, those are great. That's really wonderful. But then when you get the story behind the car, it's fascinating.
And oh, absolutely.
Every car, you know, cars connect people because of the stories. It's fascinating. It's interesting. And if you love cars and you enjoy, you know, being with people, It's such a great hobby. It's such a wonderful hobby. There's so many great folks.
Well, and do you, having not been in there, we were down in California a while back, several years ago, and I wanted to get over there, but it didn't work out. We were on a family vacation. So the question is when people do come through your, I've seen pictures and stuff, but do you have like a display that kind of shares the backdrop, the backstory of some of these cars, so people can really enjoy and savor some of these historical tidbits?
Well, there are essentially 11 galleries inside of the museum on 3 floors. First floor is the artistry floor, second floor is the history floor, and the third floor is the industry floor, and then the history on the third floor. And each of the galleries on those floors is telling a different story.
Perfect.
About the car. As an example, right now,
We have on the Mullen Gallery on the first floor is what we call Hollywood dream cars, cars that were actually in the Star Wars movie and DreamWorks and Mad Max.
Right, right.
Really iconic movies. With these, we've got the original Back to the Future car.
Oh, great stuff!
But so we're filled with that, and that's each of the exhibits is telling a story. Now, depending on if you want a private tour, we'll give you. But each day in the vault, several times a day, going down to the vault for the 250 cars, those are all guided tours with one of our docents or a volunteer. And those are 90-minute tours talking about the stories behind the cars.
So
here
great.
Here's the number one ever Ferrari, the badged Ferrari. Here's the first ever all carbon fiber McLaren P1.
Wow.
it goes on and on and on. And there's so many amazing cars and so many great stories. Here's a car that Carroll Shelby and two other Texans tried to put together before the Cobra. It was a Corvette with a body by Scaglietti. But Mr. Ferrari told Scaglietti, if you do any more for the Americans, you're done with me.
oh, yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on. And there's, like I say, it's got the L29 Cord sitting next to the Thruxton, which were the first two front-wheel drive cars.
And
E.L. Cord was a better promoter and a smarter businessman than the Thruxton guys. And when he found out what Thruxton was doing, he came out as the first ever 6 weeks earlier.
Is the Thruxton guy the same guy as the motorcycle Thruxton guy? Same connection?
I don't believe so, but I can't say for sure.
Because I hear Thruxton, I hear Velocette,
Right, right. This is the Thruxton being distinctly American, and I think the other being distinctly British.
Right, right. Yeah, that brings back an amazing era of styling and automotive and motorcycling fun. I mean, the stuff was done in those years that just there was kind of no limit because nobody'd ever tried it before.
And the coachwork. I mean, there's some of the most beautiful cars you've ever seen. Our round door rolls, really one of the gems of our collection.
Oh yeah,
is the 1928 rolls rebodied in 1932 by a Belgian industrialist who wanted to win Concours. It's an 8,000-pound car.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, don't get me started on coachwork. I mean, we're talking, Talbot Lago and Delahaye and all of those guys just, make you just slobber looking at them.
Oh my God, our Shah Bugatti, which was a gift to the Prince of Persia on his wedding day, who later became the Shah of Iran,
right?
By the French government, they gave him that.
Jeez.
You think about things that were going on then too. Is that okay, this kid's going to have all the oil in the world. Let's give him something nice.
Sure.
America gave him an Airstream trailer, and the English government gave him a tea set.
So, very, very nice.
Who do you think got the oil?
I'm kind of thinking that's how that went.
Man, and you think about this, too. You think of, okay, this is a... And then you start thinking of the politics behind it. You're like, I don't want to go there. But here you've got this car that's just a very unique historical piece of history, and like you said, you look at what's being put out today, and it's a different world. McLaren is still putting out some beautiful, and there's a number of them that are still putting out beautiful coach work, but you really got to go to the fab shops where they're going to spend the countless hours to create something brand new. And speaking of countless hours, I think we're going to have you on another time again, because
are we down to it again?
Oh my gosh, about down to the wire here.
I was listening to you talk about the 90-minute tours, and I thought, so if the 90-minute tour is personally docented and everything, does the 100-minute tour include a test drive?
For you guys, it would. For you guys, it would.
Okay, well, I'll be down in about 24 hours, so you just for that, I'll buy a ticket. Hey, Terry, thanks a whole bunch. We really appreciate you coming back. This is the greatest automotive info show in the known world. We say so, so it must be true. We got a cool hot rod story you can share with your friends. That's coming up next on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Today we decided to walk to school.
The light counted. 15, 14, 31? I mean, 13?
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I
realized he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life, or just show up at your garage and weld up the frame for your rod so it stays together. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 206-437-1765. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 206- 206-437-1765, 206-437-1765.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States.
This is Quentin Folk. I dig up old hot rods, and I also dig this podcast.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving.
Hi, this is Adam Kramer from Avance.com. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It's time for Cars Confidential, and we're back with another story from, well, it's Lance Lambert this week.
Oh, it is.
What do we have this? What for stories, Brady?
Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
People have cars. They like to build cars. They like to hang out and cruise with cars. What's one other thing that a lot of car guys are into doing?
Cruising.
Yes.
And building and polishing. We did have a story about...
All of that. Think small.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Think small.
They like to collect models.
Ah. See, a lot of car guys...
And Matchbox and all Hot Wheels.
Building models of cars is how a lot of car guys got started.
Okay, that's what I started doing as a kid.
Exactly.
Dreaming about that SS396 sitting at the dealership, Manor Chevrolet.
That's
and I said, that is a beautiful car. And
Lance has a story.
Eventually, I got
in his book that is called Model Behavior. And it really is about how an awful lot of car people got started. It goes, the love of old cars hits a lot of people at a very young age, and it continues to increase as they get older. And a lot of the participants in the old car hobby got their start by spilling paint and ruining shirts and inhaling toxic fumes. No, it was not some illegal activity. It was building model cars. As a boy growing up, I, like most of my friends, found various ways to make some spending money. At first, it was scouring the neighborhood in search of pop bottles to cash in for 2 cents each at the local thriftway. Lance is really old.
I did beer bottles.
He's like way, well, see, there you have it. The climb up the economic ladder continued as I cut grass and did odd jobs in the neighborhood and waited until I was old enough for the opportunity to make some real money. Every kid in my neighborhood sought the same financial goal, to get a newspaper delivery route. And this money-making method always seemed available to anybody who tried hard enough to be a paperboy. I acquired a route in the neighborhood that included 80 homes in an area of about 3 or 4 blocks square. This doesn't sound like a large area, but it took about an hour every day to get the papers, load them into the double bag, one in front and one in back, fold the papers, toss them onto the porches rather than into the bushes. It was a 7-day-a-week job, and anybody with a paper route was grateful to have this sort of income. I had a paper route.
I had about 5.
Yeah.
I was the I was the temporary guy.
You were the route king.
I was the guy that would fill in when people would go on vacations.
Yeah,
hence, as a kid, I knew at least literally five different routes, and I could at least travel 5 to 7 or 8 miles on my bicycle
there
on some
go.
Of these routes because it was country.
Well, at the end of every month, the subscribers would pay their bills, and I was left with about $30 to do what I pleased. And one of the pleasing things about this that I did every month was to buy one or two model cars. I usually purchased an AMT 3-in-1 kit for about $1.25. They were excellent quality kits, and AMT offered a huge selection of cars. If the money was right, I'd settle for the cheaper model of lesser quality that was usually poorly made and required a lot of work to correct the manufacturer's mistakes. My AMT 1962 Pontiac Grand Prix convertible won a first place award. The award was another model at the local hobby shop. And a few months later, my six-cylinder powered dragster also brought home a first place award of another model. Thankfully, the awards were AMT kits and not the piles of poorly produced plastic pieces found in the cheaper kits. Lance loves alliteration.
He does.
The piles of poorly produced plastic pieces.
I always was the Ravel, and there was never any problem with them.
Yeah, Ravel kits were okay. I had a lot of those. So what was it about building model cars that was so fulfilling? Well, everything. I loved the solitude of sitting in my room and building
AMT
a kit
right there,
while listening to the voices of Elvis and Chuck Berry spill out of my radio, also purchased with paper route money. To this day, I can remember the specific model car I was building when working on an oldies station plays a top 40 hit from the late 50s or 60s. My best friend Dale also built model cars, and we each felt like we were much better model builder than the other guy. Occasionally, we'd sit in one of the other bedroom and work out models together. "Look how good my paint job looks," I'd say to Dale. This was usually followed by a remark from him such as, "Well, why is there glue smelled all over it? Look how the paint on my model shines." And Dale and I are still good friends, and I'm still convinced I was a better model builder than he is. Many good things come to an end, and eventually building model cars stopped being my favorite pastime. Enjoyment was subdued by turning 16, getting a driver's license, and replacing the little tabletop cars with full-sized cars. Money saved from my paper route and odd jobs resulted in a bright yellow 1948 Chevy being pulled in the driveway. Decades have passed since then, and I've purchased and sold dozens of old cars. My love of model car building has never left, and thankfully has emerged from hibernation and is again providing me with hours of pleasure. There's a small room off the Lambert garage that Mrs. Lambert and I call the car den. A friend refers to as, perhaps more accurately, Lance's I Love Lance room. It's filled with hundreds of automotive books and decorated with old photos, automotive memorabilia, awards from car shows, and several small-scale die-cast cars that cost more to purchase than what I paid for a few full-size cars. Once again, I can be found gluing plastic fenders together while listening to Kathy's Clown by the Everly Brothers, or mounting tiny tires on tiny rims while listening to Ray Charles belt out Hit the Road, Jack. Sitting on a shelf in the den is a recently completed AMT model of a 1949 Mercury, and on the desk is a partially completed 1940 Willys. My feeling of pleasure now is no less than what I felt 50 years ago. Watch out, Dale. I'm back. You know, there's a picture in the book of his car den with all that kind of stuff, and I cannot help but wonder if these days his collection of 40s and 50s and 30s model radios has taken over the space of some of those, because he's got over 50 table model radios
I
now.
I know.
He's a Bakelite king these days.
Yes.
He's collecting those radios. But you know what? I know he still likes the models. And who among us, you know, didn't do car models as a kid? I certainly did. And I was always impressed. There was always that one guy who could take the model and do something cool to it that you would never think of, like, ooh, I chopped the top. Well, you and your razor blade, look at you. And it actually
I never
looks
thought about
good.
Doing something like
I,
that.
I had friends that would cut them up just to play.
Yeah.
Of course, we also had friends that would, you know, cover them with lighter fluid and set them on
fire. I had
fire.
Friends that do that, yes.
But, you know, you did what you did. But, yeah, what a great hobby, and what a good way to get into the car, you know.
Well, I went from
scene, if you will.
I went from models, and then I progressed into H.O. Gage Tyco racing set.
Oh, okay, sure. I remember those.
I had two other friends, John and Jim, And they each had their Tyco racing set, and so we had our little box with our specialty cars and our new our tires and the cleaning kits, and we'd take them apart, fix them, and then we would go to each other's house and race against each other. We'd put like 25 cents worth of pennies in there, first, second place,
sure.
And it was a lot of fun, and I have the fondest memories of John and Jimmy doing that. And then, of course, I had the Hot Wheels, and I got into Hot Wheels and doing the same thing. I had Tori and myself and Kenny and a couple others. We all had Hot Wheel sets. We'd
sure.
go out, and we got to the point where we were taking the Hot Wheels and putting out of the second story the track and going down to the first story and seeing how fast we could get these things going.
See, we were never quite that creative. We just threw them out the window.
Oh, well, we
it
did
wasn't
the
quite
real
the same.
Thing.
Yeah.
We did the real thing.
Hey, did you ever, when you were a kid, did you ever lag for pennies? You know how this works? You basically, you're up against a wall,
okay.
and you back a ways, and you toss the penny and see how close, whoever gets the penny the closest to the wall would actually hit
no,
the
I've
wall.
No, I've seen that in movies.
Okay, so we used to lag cars. And a friend of mine had a basement with a linoleum floor. It's very smooth and very flat. And so you'd sit back, you know, 15 feet or however far you could get, and push the car, you know, and see who could get
right.
as close to the... It was kind of fun. We were, you know...
Like the football thing you do with the little... You taste paper.
Kind of like
you,
that.
And,
yeah.
Go by to the edge.
Yeah, we were 10, 11. That was big fun. Then we discovered girls, and it wasn't...
Well, I discovered bicycles because that became my passion, taking apart, rebuilding, painting. I was like the first kid in the neighborhood who had his own, off-road bike by taking a Schwinn 3-speed and removing the fenders, polishing it, you know, grinding it down and painting it. And
I was the first kid in my neighborhood that had a bicycle with a car steering wheel on it.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah, you could kill yourself.
You
really
could kill yourself
easy.
Really
dead,
easy.
Absolutely dead.
But I did the jumps. I did the Evel Knievel jumps. And I nearly, I bent forks right and left, learned how to twist those rims back into place.
Yeah.
I was proficient. And none of my boys, as much as I try to introduce them to all these things, it never took.
I think you successfully explained to them how dying was not an option.
Well, they enjoyed riding their bikes, but they
right.
just didn't get into it. And, you know, to be honest... Electronics really came into part into our life, and
sure.
that kind of took over with Xboxes and Wii's and stuff.
Oh, man.
I wouldn't trade it, though.
Well, hey, thanks, Lance, for letting us read out of your book again. These things are available, of course, on Amazon and through the Vintage Vehicle Show website. Your bookshelf would not be complete without them. The Nathan Lipinski Weekly Trivia Question is next in a peek at next week's show. Put it in park. Stick around. Building a hot rod, rat rod, project vehicle with or without wheels? Bumping up against your skill level? Witch Doctor Restoration can give you a hand or a head to bounce an idea off of. Shane Osborne is an expert at all kinds of fabrication and mechanical work. He can take your ideas and bring them to life or just show up at your garage and help. Your project is his project. If you're anywhere in the greater Seattle area, call him. He'll come to you. 425-626-4135. Witch Doctor Restoration is the place for quality work at your garage. Witch Doctor Restoration, 425-626-4135. 425-626-4135.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas. And you're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can.
All right. Hey, welcome back. It's Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about the upcoming events, which there aren't any because of this silly coronavirus, and the Nathan Lipinski weekly trivia question.
Around the wheel, but not on around the wheel on your bicycle.
No, not so much. No, well, maybe. I mean,
you know,
could,
you,
I
like
guess.
You said, you put the steering wheel on
That's
your bike.
That's right, yeah. So last
cool.
week's question. Last week's question was actually a fun one. We wanted to know in 1958, Ford did something that had not been done before, and we wondered what it was that had to do. It was kind of a safety sort of a thing, and I think I was too vague in the way that I phrased the question, because we did not get an answer, and usually even Nathan jumps in and he knows
right.
the answer to these things. But this one was not figured out. So the answer to the question was, what was it that they came up with? It was the electric trunk release.
Electric?
The electric trunk release. It had a button in the dashboard that you and the trunk popped open. Ford came out with that in 1958.
My car still have the cable.
Well, your car's not a Ford. I don't know what to tell you. I
well,
mean,
even
not,
my
it's
Ford,
it wasn't standard
Taurus
equipment.
Has
mind you.
A cable on it.
Yeah, well, mind you, it's not standard equipment
right.
in 1958. But that's when it was invented, and Ford was the one that.
But
did
I'm
it.
Just saying, even to this day,
lots of cars have electric trunk releases.
It's like it's the button you press, and it pops up the back.
Is essentially, that, yeah.
Okay, because my El Camino has the little, or my van, you have to. Well, okay, I'll take a look. No,
yeah.
You know the van does have electric. You're right.
Yes, yes, it
but
does.
The hood has the cable.
Yes. So, yeah, nobody came up with this one, so
okay.
Nobody gets their picture with the horsepower chrome and rust barn find dust, but that's okay because this week's question is actually not a question. This is a new feature I'm going to toss in periodically. This one is an automotive factoid, and this is something that I had no idea, and yet it's true. And the factoid is this, true or false? We'll do a true or false question. In 1972, the average speed on the LA freeways, average, was 60 miles an hour. Now, this is true, okay? Just 10 years later, the average speed was 17 miles an hour. True or false?
Now, where's this supposed to be?
1972, the average speed on the LA freeways, Los Angeles freeways, was 60 miles an hour. Just 10 years later, the average speed was 17. Average speed was 17 miles an hour.
Are we talking LA?
Los Angeles. Los Angeles freeways, 1972.
Let me think.
1982. The question is true or false. You can figure it out. Somebody will know. And
you don't want me to say?
Yeah, you don't have to. It's
okay.
All right. I mean, you can, but you're not going to win. You're
no,
not,
I'm going to let somebody
not
else do
getting
this.
The barn find dust.
No,
I'm telling
I don't.
You, right? It's
okay.
Over here on the shelf next to us.
I can
yeah.
tell you what it is today. It's about 85.
Well, because there's nobody on the freeway.
No. When we last were down in L.A. in that
oh,
area.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Unless
but that's
it's
not,
totally.
That's not the average speed. Because remember, there's traffic. There's traffic
okay,
and there's
so when it's
rush
not,
hour.
When it, so before you get to the traffic jam.
Average. No. I mean,
okay.
This is L.A. freeways.
All right.
And so, you know, this is verifiable. You can see what it is. 1972 versus 1982. True or false? You can get with us at Horsepower Chrome and Rust on the Facebook page. You can do contact us at Horsepower Chrome and Rust, of course. And you too, yes, you too may get your picture taken and put on the website with our bucket of Horsepower Chrome and Rust barn find dust, which, as you know, if you sprinkle on your vehicle, will quadruple the value because you can tell people you found it in a barn.
Yes.
Well, speaking of barn finds, by the way,
yes.
I went out to my friend Phil Pixonley's house.
Oh, that's right.
On Monday, yeah, because it was Memorial Day. I drove out there to see him, and he's got a new toy that just cracked me up. I think it is a 1948 or 47 American LaFrance fire truck cab. It's the coolest thing
it is.
He found. And so it basically, it's the cab and the front half of the chassis. There's no motor. He bought it because it's cool looking, let's face it. He's going to make it into a car hauler, and of course he's capable of doing that. But it is the coolest looking thing I have ever seen. I just wanted to say, Phil, you have got a project coming up. Hey, thanks for listening. Your message gets directly to us if you sponsor us or sponsor with us, so we can help you with that at Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Thanks for liking and following our website and our Facebook page. Thanks to Terry Cargas from Peterson Automotive Museum for chatting again this week. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm still Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we trip the lights on another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.